Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSherry. If this is your first time joining me, hello and welcome. Thank you so much for deciding to spend some time with me on this whatever day you're listening. And if you're coming back, thank you so much for returning. We've got loads of great stuff to talk about this week. How was my week? My week was pretty good. I actually spent quite a bit of time in Collins Barracks over the weekend with all of the St. Patrick's Day festivities, which was great, I have to say. I was there for Mother on Thursday night, that big party, which was loads of fun. Really good fun. I had a great time. Elaine May put on an amazing show with loads of different Irish artists. It was fantastic. I really hope they take that kind of to some of the festivals around the summer. I spent the afternoon there with the kids on Saturday. They had a great time, absolutely brilliant time. And then sure, I was back there on Sunday or Saturday or whatever day it was for Pillow Queens. So yeah, it was great. I think St. Patrick's Festival did a great job of organizing good stuff this year. And then yesterday I did a great work thing. I was lucky enough, I actually was really honoured to emcee the launch event for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre's new national campaign about consent. It's called We Consent. You can go and visit weconsent.ie. And it's a big, a sustained 3-year campaign to kind of raise the issue of consent for everyone, no matter what your age, your sexuality, your relationship status, basically kind of trying to, I suppose, diversify the conversation around consent and make it clear that consent can be fun and sexy and it doesn't have to be, you know, a big serious moment in every sexual conversation. And I got to, emcee the launch event, and Minister Simon Harris opened it. And then we had a great panel of people from various backgrounds, experiences and walks of life. And we all talked about what we think we can do as a country to try and make progress in the area of consent. And I think it made me feel really optimistic and hopeful. I really enjoyed it. So if you want to go to weconsent.ie, you can see all the work that's being done there. Other than that, this week, a new Patreon episode went up, mailbag episode, where I respond to your voice notes. Also told my road rage story on there, which took 10 minutes. My God, what a story. So if you want that, head over to the Patreon. It's patreon.com/catchupwithLouiseMcSherry. But, you know, we've got actually loads to discuss today, so you might as well get into it. And we will start, as always, with the news. Aoife Moore, thank you so much for being with us once again.
Good morning.
It's time to talk news. We have to start with, I actually don't have the words.
Other than COVID, I don't think we've talked about anything as much as we've talked about housing.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. And it's because it is literally ruining people's lives on a daily basis in this country. And it feels like nothing is being done about it.
Well, nothing is being done about it when you think about it realistically. If you look at the housing figures. So Wednesday night, the government won a series of votes on the eviction ban. So the eviction ban is due to run out on March 31st, and over 3,000 notices to quit have been issued, and people will be basically put out of their homes. This is bad in any case, but what is making this worse is that there is basically no emergency accommodation left across the country.
And very little regular accommodation.
Exactly.
So, like, I was listening to the group chat on the way here, and Richard said, I think that there's 31 places up for rent in Cork.
Mm-hmm.
31?
Yeah. So...
nuts.
This was a Sinn Féin motion that was put down, and the way the government does it is they table a counter motion. Nessa Hourigan, the Green Party TD for Dublin Central, and I think it's worth noting that she is the Dublin Central TD, and that is where the absolute pinnacle of the housing crisis is Dublin Central. She had said that due to her principles, she did not feel that she could all in good conscience vote for the eviction ban to end when people in her constituency, I think nearly 1,000 people in her constituency, have had a notice to quit. There is nowhere for women and children to go. She abstained on the amendments from the Regional Independent Group, who put forward a number of amendments to the eviction ban ending, as did Ian Two Peters Patter Tobin. None of those passed. And then the counter motion, she voted against it. The government won by 15 votes. But because Nessa Hourigan voted against the government, she was suspended for 15 months. She was stripped of her chair. She chaired the Oireachtas Budgetary Oversight Committee. She's been stripped of that. And now the government only have a majority of one. They ended up having to lean on a number of independents. And I think what's interesting is the independents that they usually would rely on, people like Michael Healy-Ray and Matty McGrath, voted against the government as well. They just said that from the implementation of the eviction ban and the ending of it now, the government had no plan in the meantime. They did not use this time appropriately to find other ways. So they said that they were voting to extend the eviction ban so that the government could get time to get a plan together. To be honest, I can see the government side of this, because this was a Sinn Féin motion. It was not legally binding. It wouldn't have extended. It was just to get the government on record. But that's what Sinn Féin wanted to do. You know, it's a propaganda tool as well, to get the government on record to say, we ended the election and this is what we're going to do. The government argues that homelessness actually went up when the eviction ban was in place, and therefore it didn't work. Most housing experts and housing charities have said actually the housing crisis would have been a lot worse had the eviction ban not been in place. They've also said that small landlords are continuing to leave the market. So if we keep an eviction ban, they will leave the market. But that doesn't make any sense, because if we have an eviction ban, they can't leave the market. But in a sense, we'll be trapping people and the small landlords and these investments that they don't want to be in anymore. It ends on March 31st, and most people, I was listening to Father Peter McVeary the other day, who said that most people will look, especially people, women and children, will look to family members to have somewhere to stay. Ironically, when you go and stay with family members, you won't be counted as homeless anymore. They said that we are headed for a tsunami of homelessness. I think we are going to see people turn up at Garda stations. I think we are going, especially in Dublin City Centre. I think maybe the problem could be kind of mitigated in other counties. It is not going to be able to be mitigated properly in Dublin City Centre. It is coming into high season. It is after Paddy's Day. The hotels are not going to be taking on homelessness contracts. They're just not. They are not a solution to the housing crisis. They are a hospitality business. It is not the hotel's fault. And this means now that the Labour Party are going to put down a motion of no confidence in the government on Wednesday. And everyone will have to vote confidence in this government on Wednesday. If the government loses this vote, which I don't think they will, but if they did, that would spark a general election.
You know what's really frustrating about this is that, like, you know, this shouldn't be about politics. Like, we are literally talking about people who are terrified of losing their homes. I was reading Ellie Balfe, who is a journalist and someone I kind of have known professionally over the years, posted on her Instagram story this morning about herself and her family situation. They have been evicted, no fault evictions, 5 times in the last 10 years.
Jesus.
So every time they find somewhere to live, her and her kids, the landlord decides they're going to sell, as is their right, and they have to find somewhere else. But finding somewhere else is a long and excruciating process. And she's basically said she's currently, they have at last, after months and months and months, she said over the last number of months, she has literally applied for every single house that became available, even ones that she couldn't afford it, just as an experiment.
Yeah.
And she came nowhere close. Over months and months and months, she came nowhere close to finding something. She has finally find something and has a verbal agreement. She's like, until she has that lease, like, she's terrified.
Of course.
You know, she's in a position, obviously, where she can, you know, whatever. She's been lucky enough to find places over the years. But, like, what kind of life is that for someone to have to worry constantly?
That's what they always say as well. Like, the housing is one thing. The health crisis. The health crisis that this is, you know, creating. Like, we know that children brought up in hotels don't develop like other children. They speak. Later in life, you know, they are brought, like, they have serious mental health problems. It's a type of trauma. It has ruined happy relationship. It has caused divorces.
It's just, and I guess the point that I'm making is that I find it frustrating for to think about politicking in the context of this situation, which is life and death for people. And
yeah, and last night I was on the Tonight Show and Claire Brock, the presenter, asked Claire Curran, the Sinn Féin TD for Roscommon, if this was a political loss for Sinn Féin. And, you know, Claire Curran said, well, I don't really, she doesn't say it the way I'm going to say it, but she said, I don't really give a shit about political losses. She said, the eviction ban is a loss for people who are going to be evicted. During leaders' questions, Leo Varadkar downplayed Sinn Féin's narrative and said, you know, that Sinn Féin were scaremongering, that it wouldn't be 3,000 people who were evicted onto the street immediately. And he's probably right. But I would also question, well, what is enough? 1,000 people.
But also, okay, let's say Sinn Féin are scaremongering for political reasons. Why? What about all the housing charities? Why are they all saying this is going to be a disaster? Why is every housing expert in the country saying it's going to be a disaster? Like, are they scaremongering?
I find it really strange as well. And, like, I'm not a politician. I would quite like to know. Yeah, they all have their briefing notes. But I was on the Tonight Show last night with Niall Collins, who's the Fianna Fáil TD for Limerick. And he said that the government's housing plan is working. And I would just love to know, do they actually believe that? Because I'm not saying this as, you know, a political journalist or someone who has a vested interest in hating the government. I don't care about the government. It's not working. Anyone can see it's not working. Homelessness goes up every single month. You've been at this. Fine Gael have been at this for 12 years. It's not working. Like, I don't know if it's like a political inertia or something that, like, or a cognitive dissonance where you can't admit that you've done something wrong because then you might lose in the elections. But by the looks of it, they're going to lose in the elections anyway.
It's wild. It's wild. And it's, I don't know. I don't have the words for it. It's so upsetting. And I can completely understand if people feel hopeless in the context of it, because it does feel like that sometimes. There are people obviously working hard and campaigning and, you know, really trying hard to make a difference here. So don't give up hope. But if you're frustrated, I absolutely feel that with you. Okay, let's move on. There's been this horrible conversation over the last week or so about trans people in prison, which has all come from one case, a case of Barbie Kardashian.
Yeah, so for the background for this, a 21-year-old transgender woman was sentenced last week to a 5.5-year prison sentence for being threatening to kill or cause serious harm to her mother, and 4 charges of threatening to kill or cause serious harm to one of her social workers. Now, the judge himself said that this was one of the most complex cases he had ever dealt with in his career. He said that her psychiatric and probation reports show a really complex background. And this is what you will always see all the time. I have been a court reporter for years. People don't get up one day and decide that they're going to start threatening to kill people. This person has had a very traumatic life. So they said, the judge said that her complex background from her childhood through to her adulthood made for chilling and disturbing reading. She had difficulties at home when she was taken into foster care at a really young age, a residential facility for high risk and vulnerable children. And then she was kept after her 17th birthday, which is not really the norm, but there was nowhere in the state to meet her complex need. And then she stayed there until she was 19, and then she was taken to Limerick prison. Honest to God, if there is nowhere in the state for someone's complex need. I do not think that the right place for them then after that is prison. The court acknowledges, he said, the extremely complex background of the accused, who at this stage must be regarded as a vulnerable person. The Garda said they had grave concerns about her movements and that she still had motivation to carry out threats, and she is currently in solitary confinement in Limerick Prison. Now, Simon Harris, who is now the Justice Minister, this was sparked because a website sent someone along to a press conference who asked the question about whether transgender women should be in women's prisons. This is an incredibly toxic debate that we have adopted from what happened in Scotland with Nicola Sturgeon. Now, the Minister for Justice was actually a bit more robust than the Taoiseach was. I'm not going to go into what the Taoiseach said, but the Minister for Justice said that all the policies, the new policy for regarding transgender people in prison is going to be informed by best practice. So the Irish Prison Service is due to finish their policy this year because there had been a report that there wasn't actually any protocol for how to deal with transgender people in prison. Mm. So the last report said that, a 2016 report, God, that's so long ago, said there was no policy in place regarding the treatment and accommodation of transgender prisoners, and there is clearly a need to address this.
Yeah.
And they said that transgender people in particular face particular challenges in prison. They're not easily accommodated with the strict binary gender structure of most prisons. And there are recurring concerns about prison placement policies.
Yeah, what about non-binary people?
Exactly. And the right to gender expression, the use of gender-specific policies such as body searches. Mm. They're also, and I think this is something we really need to remember, transgender prisoners are also at a particular risk of assault and victimization as a result of the culture of violence and hyper-masculinity that exists in male prisons. They also talked about the sincere concern that they have for transgender women, especially in male prisons. So this is one case.
Mm.
It is being whipped up by people who do not care about people in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not care about transgender people. I absolutely believe that if someone is dangerous and people, including prisoners, need to feel safe. But everyone, as Simon Harris said, it will be carried out on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
And it will be risk-assessed. We cannot have someone in solitary confinement for a long period of time. It is cruel and unusual punishment. We're not supposed to be doing it anyway. Especially someone who was kept in residential care because there was no else for them in the state. And this person has complex needs. She has a chilling background of childhood trauma. And she's currently in solitary confinement in prison. Do we think that that's going to make her better?
Well, no, obviously not. But I mean, even just when you take it down to this, you know, pretense for concern for prisoners, like what Simon Harris said is the key. You know, if it says, when we look at the prison population, the most important thing for the Irish Prison Service to do in any scenario is ensure the safety and well-being of all prisoners. If there is a prisoner who is in any way a risk to the prison population, measures are put in place to make sure that the person does not mix with that prison population. So there is no need to be concerned, because everyone who goes into prison is assessed in terms of what their impact on the prison population is going to be. So this, like, pretend
also,
fear
most
is just
of these
so
people,
frustrating.
Most of these people who are worried about women in prison are the same people who want people locked up and thrown away in the quay for dealing drugs or stealing a pint of milk.
But also, it's the language that's being used, and we're not going to repeat the language.
No.
But the
because
language
the question,
that's being used
the question
is
that
so
was asked to the
incendiary.
Taoiseach, yeah, the question, that's when I am not repeating it. The question that was asked to the Taoiseach was incredibly loaded, and he did not answer it properly.
No,
you
he
can
didn't.
Look it up if you want to see it, but I'm
he
not
didn't.
Repeating it here.
No, I agree, but it was I personally was really disappointed.
So was I.
In the same like week that I think it was like Out magazine or Advocate magazine or whatever, one of those gay magazines was like,
I put him as like one of those inspirational
like
gay people.
Inspirational gay Irish people for St. Patrick's Day, and it's like, well,
and then this week if he doesn't regret it, I think he should. I think
he should.
Very clumsy. If not,
I hope he does regret it. Yeah. Hopefully he regrets it. Hopefully he's like, that was I fucked that up. We all fuck things up sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk.
We do have a good one.
We do have a good story coming, guys. So just stick with us.
Stick with us.
But let's talk about this news regarding a study about stalking in Ireland.
Yeah, so the study was carried out by University College Cork. And the most stark result from it was that over 50% of people who had been stalked did not go to the Gardaí.
Mm.
42% of people did not report incidents, experiences that were said to be more negative than positive. And they said that respondents to the survey reported being threatened, physically attacked and sexually assaulted. They said they received inappropriate texts, WhatsApps, emails, while a high proportion of the targets were inappropriate social media contact as well. In the majority of cases, perpetrators of stalking and harassment were known to the victims. However, the research also found that in a considerable portion of cases, the perpetrator was categorised as a stranger. Over 2/5 of the respondents indicated that the perpetrators threatened them harm or those close to them. Having pictures or recordings taken without consent was mentioned 270 times, with 170 reports of private images of a very personal nature being shared. There was more than 1,000 participants and over 892 individuals. The report was based on, and they reported significant financial impacts and said they suffered long-term psychological distress. Now, this research was taken after Una Ring and Eve McDoyle, absolute legends, two women who had been stalked and campaigned to make stalking its own standalone offence in Ireland with Fianna Fáil Senator Lisa Chambers. Mm. If you haven't seen their story, they were on The Late Late Show. They are incredible women. Yeah. Both went through seriously almost fatal incidents and managed to change the law in Ireland for other people. So one of the authors of the report, Dr. Kira Staunton, said there was a range of avoidance behaviours used by victims to protect themselves. That can be, you know, changing the way they go to work, making their profiles private. The financial distress comes from people then install CCTV out of their own pocket, that sort of stuff. But also, I think what the most worrying thing is that most people didn't go to the Gardaí.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They said that they're kind of trying to take care of it themselves.
They didn't feel like it would be taken seriously. They thought sometimes in their own heads they were overreacting. Like if you, Eve actually did an episode of the Talking Bollocks podcast last week where she talked about the initial stages of her stalking, and she worked in Galway, and she was sort of joking with her friends. Like she went for lunch during work, and at one point she was like, "Oh Jesus, he'll be back again," and he walked past, you know, the window of the cafe. Like she was joking about it at first, and then it became a real issue. And they said that, yeah, they didn't report because they didn't appreciate what had happened to them was actually a crime and currently a crime under the offence of harassment. And they are now hoping that this shines a light on stalking as a standalone crime, and that people are more encouraged to come forward and not, and to take it seriously. I always think with stuff like this, you need to go with your gut.
Yeah.
And I think women especially, and men are stalked as well, but I think women especially are very likely to say, "I'm overplaying it and being dramatic."
Yeah. Sure, we've all done that.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily with stalking, but with like, "Oh, it wasn't that big a deal." And then you tell a friend a story 5 years later and they're like, "That's a big deal."
Yeah, even as like a single woman in Dublin in the last year, I have had a number of experiences where I have been like, "Oh, it's probably not that big a deal," and then I tell you the story and you're like, "Oh no."
So we're deleting him, just for the record. Okay, now, what is going on with Donald Trump? Is he going to be arrested?
Statement for the fucking ages. What is going on with Donald Trump? Ironically, the thing you think he's going to be arrested for is not what he's being arrested for. So he produced the most unhinged social media post I have ever seen since Brian McFadden offered to fight ISIS.
A classic for the ages. Yeah,
he said last week that he expected to be arrested on Tuesday. Tuesday came and went and he was not arrested. He currently lives at Trump Tower, and it is the Manhattan District Attorney that he is apparently pressing charges. So the charges are related to a hush money probe where he paid off Stormy Daniels, an adult entertainment star who was having an affair with. His solicitor, Michael Cohen, has already publicly admitted that he paid off Stormy Daniels with Donald Trump's say-so. He has already done time. The unhinged post on his own social media company said it was the corrupt and highly political Manhattan District Attorney's Office. And then in capital letters, "Protest! Take our nation back!" There had been real concerns then in New York. They were erecting barricades around Trump Tower. There was additional police forces put out onto the street, because we know what happens when Donald Trump tells people to take the streets back.
Exactly.
Which he hasn't been arrested for either. They said that the Manhattan District Attorney was out on the news during the week and said, like, we won't be threatened by Donald Trump or anyone else. The only other thing, as I would say, is that New York is a really, really, really democratic city and a really democratic state. So the notion that, like, people would come out in their thousands to protest for Donald Trump, it's probably not going
to
happen.
Well, the Republicans, they like to travel.
Yeah. So,
especially the MAGA ones.
Oh, yeah. Get them freaking flyaways. So the... Yeah, the grand jury's proceedings were called off on Wednesday, which is now going to delay the indictment, but it is highly likely that he is going to be indicted because paying off someone with campaign funds for political purposes...
Not good.
...is illegal.
Okay, we'll watch with interest. Now, let's talk about the giant rabbit.
Yes.
This is crazy.
This went on for longer than I thought it would.
Like,
so the DSPCA... issued a call during the week. Has anyone lost their giant stray rabbit?
Now,
if you have not seen this rabbit.
No, you need to Google the rabbit. It's a Flemish giant rabbit. Like, when we say giant rabbit, you might be thinking the size of, I don't know, a small dog. No, no.
This is like a medium dog.
I would be terrified if I saw this rabbit. I would be terrified.
So they nicknamed
this rabbit could bite your hand off.
100%. So they nicknamed her Queen Maeve. And she was found,
in Mulhoddart.
In Mulhoddart. And she was settled in Rathfarnham. So she was enjoying her new surroundings, they said. She's been very good and was very happy for the vets to examine her. So she's not an angry giant rabbit. She's just...
Yeah, but you wouldn't know that if you just came across her. You know what I mean?
So Flemish giants are the largest breed of domesticated rabbit and can weigh up to 10 kilos, with the average weight being around 7 kilos. I am not going... I don't like to guess anyone's weight. This lady is more than 10 kilos. Like,
she has to be.
I can lift 10 kilos with one hand in the gym. This is more.
We love a fuller figured woman around here. Like, this is not judgment. Just, she's fucking huge.
Like, her feet are the same size as my hands.
I would be, truly, if I came, I would be like, am I in Labyrinth? Like, what is going on? She's huge. And the fact that she was just, like, randomly wandering around.
Yeah, so they, because it is, I know it sounds insane because she's so big, but she is a domestic, they are a domesticated rabbit. So it went viral, obviously. Like, it was all over the news. I've seen it in, like, you know, websites in America. Like, everyone's talking about it. They have described Queen Maeve in the newspapers as the size of a small dog.
No. If so, that picture is lying.
So if by any chance you don't read the news, but you listen to Catch Up and you are missing your giant dog rabbit, you need to go to the DSPCA in Rathfarnham because she's over there.
Sorry, like, if you lost your giant rabbit, would you not be looking for her? Like, also, would you not be on to the DSPCA and being like, look, any chance?
Maybe they're embarrassed, because how does one lose a rabbit so giant?
I feel like they are intentionally not. I think they were like, Maeve, this is a housing crisis. You're not paying rent. You've got to go.
Because she looks like she'd eat you out of house.
Cozy lives.
Like, she... Wow. Because I'd say Queen Maeve, I'd say she eats a good butt too. Like, that wouldn't be...
Oh, yeah.
So Cozy Lives, I'd say they're just...
Not, by the way, endorsing this behavior.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely unacceptable. We don't abandon our pets.
If you can't look after the pet, give it to DSPA. So don't leave her, cutting around Mulhoddart.
Exactly. Maeve, we hardly knew you. I hope you're being well cared for and they find a new home for you, because maybe, I do not think those owners are coming back.
I wouldn't. I am a complete bleeding heart, but I wouldn't take her and lick.
I would. It would not be for me, that life. No.
No.
If you are listening, Maeve's owners, I do not mean to denigrate you under any circumstances. I just simply can imagine the responsibility of a Flemish giant rabbit would be immense. Okay. On that note, we'll wrap it up. Thanks a million, Aoife. What a joy it is to be with you. We've lost her. We'll speak again. last September, the world watched as the women of Iran took to the streets to protest after 22-year-old Mahsa Amini died in the custody of the country's morality police after being arrested for a so-called improper wearing of her hijab. Since then, the protests have not stopped as Iranian women fight for freedom and equality, despite the fact that there have been many arrests and even more recently, the mass poisoning of schoolgirls. I've been honestly just so deeply moved by the videos of young women taking a stand in Iran, and I really wanted to learn more about what's happening there and also kind of, I guess, remind ourselves that this is ongoing and to learn a little bit more about how we can support them. Shilan Yousafzadeh joined me this week to give us an update and tell us about what's being done in Ireland to support women in Iran. So I guess we'll start, maybe if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be in Dublin and maybe some of the work that you've been doing to support people in Iran.
Sure. So I actually moved to Dublin 20 years ago in wow. July of 2003. I moved here with my family when I was 12, so the beginning of my teenage years, and I've lived in Ireland since. Mm-hmm. So I can very strongly say that Ireland is probably home at this stage. I've lived here longer than I lived in Iran.
Yeah.
But there's always that like connection to, you know, your home country and when you come, where you come from, and you always try to keep that connection. And so throughout my life, that connection has had different shapes or forms. At some stage, I was, you know, doing activities with Amnesty International, trying to raise awareness about political prisoners. Later in life, I got more involved with the community, trying to kind of celebrate our cultural heritage, including Nowruz, which is Persian New Year.
Which was this week, right?
It was actually on Monday.
Yeah.
So it falls on the spring equinox, which this year was on the 20th of March. Mm. And so I was always kind of involved with trying to promote and raise awareness about Iranian culture in different shapes or forms until the events of last September, following the death of, you know, 22-year-old Mahsa Jina Amini in Tehran, following her arrest by the morality police, where she was beaten up and unfortunately she died in hospital. Mm. And so that triggered like a huge movement, not just in Iran, but like across the world, where Iranian people were just like angered as to why a young, you know, 22-year-old girl should be killed for not wearing the hijab properly. Mm. And I think there was like, it was almost like a burst of all these other things that have been happening in Iran for the last 43 years, all the injustices, the fact that women are not treated equally by the Iranian law when it comes to marriage, divorce, custody. This just erupted that. And so in Dublin as well, you know, even though we're a relatively small community of a couple of thousand, mix of students, people coming here for work and families, like my own family who've lived here a long time, you know, we were also equally angered. So the community here were very much united. They started to gather on O'Connell Street almost every week, every weekend on Saturdays to, you know, share their frustration and try to raise awareness about what was happening in Iran. Mm. And that has continued since September, believe it or not.
Wow.
It's 6 months now. And we have continued to have those gatherings on O'Connell Street. On a couple of occasions, we've joined in with other forces. So a couple of weeks ago, there was the March on Women yeah. Rights Day with Rosa. So we joined in that movement as well, which was just amazing to see other women also stand up for the movement in Iran, the Women Life Freedom Movement in Iran. We joined in with the anti-racism march as well mm-hmm. a few weeks ago. So we're really trying to show that, you know, we are also a part of like the Irish community and the fabric of Irish life.
Yeah.
And yet we also want to make sure that the women in our country are not forgotten about and that we all try to raise awareness about the women in our country.
Yeah.
And so that has also led to, you know, obviously protest is one approach to raise awareness. We have also tried to lobby with Irish government and to try to get politicians to come on board. There are a couple of well-known politicians who have been very supportive of the campaign. And then recently as well, coming to Nowruz, we decided to take a different approach and try to incorporate like Persian food and that aspect of our culture, which maybe is more relatable for some people than talking about protests and whatnot. So we joined forces with a campaign called Cook for Iran, which was actually started November of last year. It's a global campaign. And the idea of Cook for Iran is to try to bring people together through food, which we all love. It's a shared interest for many people. And to use that as an opportunity to talk about Iran and raise more awareness about what's going on. And as you mentioned, to ensure that, like, you know, the news has kind of died. Nobody is really talking about Iran anymore while the movement is still ongoing. Maybe not to the same extent, because with the arrest and the protests and the sentences, including execution sentences that some people have gotten, you know, people are a little bit more hesitant to be out there. But underneath, there is still movements going on and different things happening in Iran. So that's another thing we're doing today. Actually, this evening on Thursday, we're doing a fundraising dinner at Dinj Persian restaurant in Ratgar. They've kindly agreed to be the first restaurant to collaborate with the Cook for Iran campaign. And the idea is that the funds that we raise through this fundraising dinner is actually going to an organization based in the US called the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. And they actually have a trauma relief program where they are training people on the ground in Iran remotely. So these people could be psychologists, therapists, teachers, community leaders, so that these people can support people in their community with the trauma that these people have faced. If you think about the arrest, the people that have been put into prison, even their families have gone through a lot of trauma. Absolutely. And I think it's equally important to support their mental health to ensure that they can continue this fight. So this amazing organization in the US is providing this training as well as emergency trauma support for Iranians that need it remotely. And so we're fundraising for them to ensure that they can expand these services as much as possible to service people in Iran, because there isn't much else we can do from abroad, but ensuring that the Iranian people are able to, you know, stay strong and continue this fight is the best that we can do at this stage.
It's so impressive. I am blown away. But also when I think about it, I suppose not surprised, because, you know, I can only imagine. I mean, when I read about what's happening to women in Iran, I'm upset and I feel angry and powerless and frustrated. So I can only imagine if you are Iranian, like how you would feel, you know, to be far away and know that that stuff is happening. And as you say, it's a culmination of, you know, decades of issues around women's rights. But as I said, and as you said, it's hard, I think, for people to stay engaged if they're not being updated on what's going on, which is really the main reason I wanted to speak to you this week, because, you know, this has not stopped. These problems have not stopped. And in fact, in some ways, they've gotten worse. So maybe give us a little update for people on what is happening at the moment, because, you know, the big thing that caught my attention again is this matter of poisonings that are happening to female students and teachers.
Yeah, so over the last few months, there were like multiple reports of schoolgirls, you know, suffering from nausea and diarrhea and different issues like that related to mild poisoning. And so as of March, there's been reports of like over 1,000 schoolgirls in different parts of Iran, not even like within the same city, in different cities, suffering from similar symptoms, having to be taken to hospitals. And so like no one has taken accountability for this, but there are many different, you know, theories around what may be going on. Some people think that this is kind of like an extremist response to the protests that have been led by women and girls. And a huge part of the protests were actually led by schoolgirls. Yeah. Schoolgirls who were going out in their school uniform, taking off their headscarf, or, you know, taking pictures in the schools, chanting "Woman, Life, Freedom." It was very much like a huge part of this movement was very much like youth led. And so I think this is a way of like repressing these schoolgirls who have played an important part in the movement. And it's worrying because, you know, Iran has always had this kind of like positive reputation for actually being very pro-education for women. And actually by 2011, the stats showed that like the women outnumbered the men at university campuses, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It showed that women really like were, you know, taking education as a mean for empowerment.
Yeah.
And the government was allowing this. So even for us is a surprise that it's almost like what you might see, you know, the Taliban doing in Afghanistan to suppress women's education. So it's not really clear, you know, what's going on, but it is equally worrying. And there are many footage of parents obviously being super concerned, you know, outside of schools, trying to get in, and the schools are not letting them in the school to see their kids.
Yeah.
Or they're asking the principal, like, what is the justification? And no one has any answers. So again, it you know, you think about like the future generation, and these are these young women, and potentially they are now afraid to go to school to be educated. And that's just really sad to see, you know, in this day and age. And, you know, even though we're not hearing about these things, there's also these reports about the amount of protesters who have lost their eyesight because of the pellet guns that were used during the protests. And now that the reports have all been kind of like put together, there is even, you know, speculation that these were targeted, that the people that were shooting at the protester were on purpose targeting their eyesight, because, you know, losing an eyesight is probably a much more traumatic experience, and it almost like teaches you not to go to a protest because you don't want to be disabled for the rest of your life. Yeah. And so what's really amazing is seeing footage of these young people who have lost their eyesight for life, saying they don't regret that they went to these protests, saying that they are actually happy that they're able to now pass on the message and raise more awareness. It is just like inspiring for me to see how people can live with this and get over it and still want to continue. It is just like, you know, really, really inspiring.
Oh, I have found it so moving to see the passion and commitment and power of these young women who seem so unafraid when they would have every right to be terrified. Like, I read last week about, or maybe it was even this week, about five teenage girls who danced on TikTok to calm down, the Selena Gomez
in Ekbatan.
Who then were arrested, and, you know, there's been all kinds of question marks over what's happened to them since. Like, you know, and yet teenage girls are storming out of their schools and ripping off their headscarves, and it, nothing seems to be dissuading them, and it is so powerful to see.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's important to continue to raise these stories, because even though we might not see like mass protests anymore, it's now these small movements. And these teenage girls, you know, to what I read, they were forced to make a forced confession on TV to say that they regret that they did this. But actually, in response to their dance, many other women are now using the same song and the same dance move and creating videos and sharing on social media in solidarity.
Yeah.
And so a very small like action has now created a ripple effect, and many, many more people are potentially like hearing about this.
Yeah.
So all these things are going on, and that's why it's super important for us to highlight, because again, I mean, I think that like these women are just so fearless. I wish I was like them.
I know, me too.
I never live up to what they're doing. And I think for them, it's going to be a long fight.
Yeah.
I'm optimistic that, you know, the women, the men, the people of Iran will get their freedom, the justice and the happiness that they deserve to live a happy life in a safe country peacefully. Mm. But it's going to take time.
Mm.
And I think what's important is that we look back and see what can we do from Ireland? What can we do from Europe? Because all we can do is empower these people. And there are many ways to empower them. You know, we can use our power in the European Parliament to lobby the European Union, to ensure that the correct organizations within Iran are sanctioned. There was a huge campaign going on over the last few months to add the IRGC, which is the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. So they're a branch of the Islamic Armed Forces. They have been known for committing lots of acts of terror, including shutting down the Ukrainian plane at the end of 2019. Again, this is something people may not have heard about or may have forgotten about. But this plane was leaving Iran. It was carrying many passengers, Iranian, Ukrainian, all kinds of nationalities. There were 176 people on this plane, and this plane was shut down by the government, supposedly because they thought that it was, I don't know, some sort of missile, not a passenger plane. And so no one took accountability. The families of these passengers have still not received any sort of compensation or support from the Iranian government. And again, this was an act of terror by the IRGC. So One of the big push that we are putting on European Parliament is to make IRGC a terrorist organization. They have accepted different levels of approval to do this, but then every European country needs to also adapt this within their own country's rules. So Ireland will need to adapt this. UK will need to adapt this. So that stage hasn't reached yet. Additionally, Irish government is planning to reopen its embassy in Iran, which I think at this time is a really bad decision. It's been closed for at least 10 years. There's been no embassy in Iran. I don't see why we would want to reopen an embassy in the midst of all this that's been happening. It's just giving Iran almost like an okay to say, we're okay with what you're doing. We're just going to open our embassy. And also we have an Iranian embassy in Ireland, which is opening and it's functioning. And again, there's room to show to the Iranian government that we are not okay with what's going on by potentially closing the embassy here and taking a stronger stance. You know, there's been conversations in Leinster House. The Taoiseach has spoken about Iran, has shown solidarity, but there's been no concrete action. It's just been words. We haven't seen anything more than what he said. Yes, I condemn the protests, I condemn the execution, but what's the next stage?
Yeah.
So if anybody's listening to this podcast, my ask to you is, you know, if there's going to be elections coming up, please ask your local TDs, your local councillors, your local MEPs, what's their stance on Iran? Why do they want to open the Irish embassy? Do they see any value in that? Do they not think that now is actually the time to stand for the people of Iran rather than to try to create relationship with a government that is corrupt, that's, you know, essentially putting pressure on its people, oppressing its people. So those are just some quick action things that I think the listeners can take up, and also to really like put yourself in the shoes of these young people. It doesn't matter where they come from.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they're Iranian women. At the end of the day, we should all stand for other women in the world and help empower them and ensure that they benefit from the same rights and freedoms that we have here. Yeah. And so I think let's try to like forget the nationality and the identity and just from women to women, try to support and help each other and empower these people to hopefully be able to get the rights that they're seeking.
I totally agree. And I have been thinking this week, there's this, I don't even know, and I'm going to butcher it because I don't speak Irish, but there's this phrase that has just been, it keeps coming into my head. And I don't know, is it originally an Irish thing, but it's Ní Saoirse go Saoirse na mBan, which is there's no freedom until the freedom of women. And that's how I feel. And when I was reading about what was happening, you know, and about the power of these young women and their just utter defiance, it is so inspiring. And they deserve all of our support. And, you know, none of us will be free until we're all free. And that's the reality of it. So
exactly.
I cannot thank you enough, Shailin. You are amazing. Thank you so much for giving me your time. I know it's a busy week. You have that big event tonight. And I really hope that lots of people support. If people want to come and join you on O'Connell Street, is that something you'd be open to?
Of course, we're always looking for like non-Iranians to join us as well. Like anybody who wants to join, they're more than welcome. I would say the best place for them to stay up to date with all kinds of events and activities that we're organizing is an Instagram account called Irish Iranians. So this account is managed by a couple of people that I know really well, and we try to ensure that all of our activities and events are posted there. So they can definitely have a look there to see when is the next event. Just one thing I wanted to add as well, and this is something that I only noticed when I was at the Women's March a few weeks ago, is the slogan of the whole movement that we have in Iran, which is Woman, Life, Freedom. When you think about this, it's like such a universal slogan. It doesn't even have to represent just the movement in Iran. It just represents like women overall, that we are, you know, we are like an important part of the fabric of the world. And not only should we have a place in society and family, but also like in political leadership.
Yes.
So I just wanted to finish on that. And I think that like a woman came to me, an elderly Irish woman, and she told me that, you know, when I was writing my Christmas card last year, I finished a card with the slogan Woman, Life, Freedom. And I thought this was such a beautiful way for her to say that she connected to this slogan, even though she's not from Iran.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for adding that. Thank you so much. And, you know, well done on your commitment to this. It's really impressive. Life is tough. life is busy, and you know, you would be forgiven if you guys weren't there every Saturday. But you know, your commitment is really outstanding, and I hope I can make it down some week to join you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Lots of Irish stuff this week in the entertainment stories. First of all, Miriam O'Callaghan withdrawing from the Late Late Show race. And then there's the question of the continuation of Dancing with the Stars. And also some non-Irish stuff like Gwyneth Paltrow, bone broth, and edible biodegradable glitter. Well, podcaster Cian Sullivan, it is such a delight to have you back. How's things? How's Drag Race going? Well, I completely have dipped out of it.
That's all right. Yeah, no, it's keeping well. It's wrapping up now. Season 15 is wrapping up. Yeah. And no mention of the next season, which brings me joy because it means I get a few weeks off.
Yeah, for a while there it was insane, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, Cian, of course, presents Sissy That Pod, which is a RuPaul's Drag Race recap podcast. It's excellent. I haven't listened in a while because, as I say, I've fallen off. I'm behind on Housewives.
Yeah.
I keep saying this, but like, I'm behind on everything.
That's the canary in the gold mine, really, isn't it?
Honestly, like, it's a real indicator of how things are going. Not well, bitch, to quote the Housewives. Okay, we've got lots to talk about in the world of entertainment this week. Let's start with Gwyneth Paltrow. So, yeah. Lots of chat about her.
Exactly. So, I guess the bigger story is that Gwyneth is in a Utah court in a civil case in which she is being sued by a Mr. Sanderson, who alleges that when Gwyneth collided into him on a ski slope back in 2016, due to her own negligence, caused him brain damage, for which he is suing for $300,000, and she is countersuing for $1. So she's in court at the moment, and you can see clips and stuff like that. It seems, I know, I was trying to read the summary of the case, and it seems a bit unclear who's at fault here, and it really does feel like a case that might not happen in Ireland is kind of more of a real sort of claim culture over the US sort of case here. It's hard to know, you know, is Gwyneth at fault here? He's claiming that she was looking at the scenery and not looking ahead of her, therefore she was negligent. Her lawyers are saying, oh, well, actually he suffered some temporary sight loss after he had a stroke a few years ago. Maybe it's his fault. It's difficult to know.
It's kind of unpleasant, isn't
it?
Like, I think my instinct, having literally never skied, would be if you ski, this is a possibility.
Yeah.
Like, it's a dangerous sport, potentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't be bringing anybody to court.
No, and also, like, you know, it's a dangerous sport and you have insurance. And, you know, that's a shame someone for not having insurance.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I imagine this guy is in this position. I'm sure, you know, we know how expensive medical bills are in the US. Like, I feel sorry for him if he has had some damage. Again, I'm not a doctor. I can't, you know, brain damage after one collision, maybe, I'm not sure. But it does sound like, you know, because he knew that the woman who hit into him was rich.
You can't help but feel a question if that's part
of motive
here. Yeah, exactly.
Because there was a previous case for $3.1 million that was thrown out, so now he's back with $300K. So
Okay.
But
I mean, look, brain damage, bad. Like, obviously full sympathy
we can agree.
With Mr. Sanderson. But you know.
I feel bad.
However, the more interesting, as far as I'm concerned, God, that's terrible to be like, more interesting than this man's brain damage. That's not what I mean, but I mean more interesting in terms of discussion, is what Gwyneth Paltrow revealed on a podcast recently about her diet.
Yeah, so was this an attempt to look over there from the court case? Who knows? But basically, she was speaking to her doctor for a podcast and was discussing her diet of basically not eating much bar bone broth and vegetables,
mm-hmm.
To which the internet has accused her of sort of appropriating diet culture and eating disorders as health.
Mm. I'm gonna just play the clip here,
sure,
so that people can hear, because it's quite stark when you listen to her actually describe it.
What's your wellness routine look like now?
I eat dinner early in the evening. I do a nice intermittent fast. I usually eat something about 12. Mm-hmm. And in the morning, I'll have some things that won't spike my blood sugar, right? So I have coffee, but I really like soup for lunch. I have bone broth for lunch a lot of the days. Try to do 1 hour of movement. So I'll either take a walk, or I'll do Pilates, or I'll do my Tracy Anderson. And then I get in the sauna. I dry brush and I get in the sauna. So I do my infrared sauna for 30 minutes. And then for dinner, I try to eat, you know, according to paleo. So lots of vegetables. It's really important for me to support my detox.
So yeah, people are saying this is not a healthy amount to eat. Let's be real.
Yeah, so she then subsequently, after the backlash, came out to be like, obviously I eat more than just vegetables, guys. So I'm wondering, like, is it that thing that, you know, when you get asked by your doctor how many units of alcohol do you drink a week, and you don't want to say 10, you say 4. Was she caught lying to her doctor? Was she caught, you know, lying about her habits to try and make herself look more of a health guru?
Mm.
It's difficult, but certainly the diets that she seems to be perpetuating don't sound healthy.
I mean, the thing about it is that, like, is anyone surprised? Like, you know, with everything that we know about Gwyneth and everything we know about, like, Hollywood and kind of historically the attitudes towards diet and exercise and bodies and all the rest, like, is it that surprising? Like, Gwyneth is an extremely thin woman,
mm-hmm.
always has been. You don't, for the most part, remain extremely thin without having an extreme lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the reality of it. So, you know, I kind of think the furore is, I mean, in one way it's deserved, because of course this kind of thing does feed into normal people's mm-hmm. thoughts about their diet and their bodies. But at the same time, we also have to have a bit of critical thinking, you know, and kind of question this stuff and accept that, you know, fine, Gwyneth can sit there with an, like, literally an IV pumping vitamins and nutrients into her so that she doesn't have to eat more than what she's describing. But that's mm-hmm. not something that most people are doing or are able to do or should do.
And also, say, what is bone broth?
I think it's just stock.
Okay.
Like,
you just take a chicken carcass and stick it in the pot.
Pretty much, yeah. My husband has been on one about this for years, because the Hemsley sisters, is that what they're called? There are these cook type people. I don't know, are they chefs? But they went through this phase of being like super, super popular, and their whole thing was bone broth and it's so good for you. And Gordon was always like, it's stock! It's just stock! It drove him demented. But yeah, I can't see any difference. Happy, by the way, to hear from you. If you are a bone broth fan and you feel that there's a lot more to it than stock, please do let us know. Send us a text, send us a voice note, to the catch up phone, which is, of course, 089-209-6423.
I'm looking forward to the bone broth stands in the voice messages.
Genuinely, like, I would love to be convinced, but I'm not currently.
Soon anyway. You'll be promoting your own line, Louise McSherry's line of bone broth.
Like, truly, can you think of anything more off brand for me than me releasing a line of bone broth.
It'd be like edible glitter in it and stuff. It'd be nice.
Bone broth, edible glitter. Biodegradable edible glitter.
Yeah. We don't want those micro beads.
Oh, yes. Can't wait. Can't wait. I mean, look, anything to make a book. Okay. So anyway, Gwyneth, just, you know, maybe we don't listen to Gwyneth for diet advice. That would be my recommendation. Next up, let's talk about Miriam McCallaghan ruling herself out of the Late Late Show running this week, which was, I think, fair enough for her to do, but then also resulted in lots of amusing kind of other people ruling themselves out of the Late Late Show, who, people who perhaps had never been in the running.
Yes, Miriam O'Callaghan, who kind of was odds on favourite at the start of this conversation, but pretty much this time last week to be the replacement, has kind of taken to Twitter in a statement. Shall I read the whole statement out? I have it here.
Go for it.
She said, "The Late Late Show is an incredible programme. It's not just the jewel of in the crown of Irish broadcasting. It's also an institution stitched into the fabric of Irish life. Ryan has done a superb job presenting it for the last 14 years. Now, I note that's in a slightly different coloured font, which makes me sound like she went back in and out of that after she wrote the rest of it. Although the speculation about me being one of the favourites to take over the Late Late Show is very flattering, that won't be happening as I'm not throwing my hat in the ring to be considered. I love what I do too much on primetime to leave it, and what we do in current affairs as a team really matters and can actually change lives.
It's true.
It's what I love doing most of all as a broadcast journalist, and I'm not prepared to give that up for any show. Just this week, for instance, I am in New York interviewing Bill and Hillary Clinton to mark the 25 years of the Good Friday Agreement, which brought peace to our shared island. It may be an imperfect peace, but the horrific violence of the past is gone. These are the kind of interviews and stories that matter to me." And I'm like, getting back on topic now, Miriam. "Interestingly, last night I found a letter I wrote 14 years ago. The last time I hosted the Late Late Show was up for grabs. In it, I told management that I was withdrawing my name from the ring on that occasion too, saying I no longer want to be considered for the job. If I had to leave primetime and the position 14 years on, my position remains exactly the same. I've been lucky enough to present the iconic Late Late Show twice, and I love the experience. I wish whoever does the job all the best. It's a brilliant opportunity and very exciting. I also wish my heartiest congratulations in advance to whoever gets it. What a joyous role. Enjoy."
Yeah, I think she was dead right, because it's very hard, I think, or it must be very hard. There have been one or two people who've mentioned my name in relation to it, which has given me such a laugh. Can you imagine what a turnaround? What a turnaround that would be. And the host of the Late Late Show is Louise McSharry. Wait a minute. We everybody be like, though. What? Yeah, we love a comeback story. But anyway, I think it must be difficult to have your name at the center of a conversation, which is ostensibly going to go on for months, because they're not going to announce it until the summer.
Yeah.
And especially if you don't even want it, you know, if you don't feel like it's a good fit for you, like, you don't want to be part of that speculation. And then in the end, potentially look like you've like lost a fight that you never wanted to be in, you know?
Exactly. And also, like, imagine they want someone who's going to be at the helm for the next 10 plus years, and that she might be feeling that she's committing to something, you know, that far when she might have plans to retire, etc. So.
I also think she really does love primetime. Like, I mean, full disclosure, I absolutely adore Miriam O'Callaghan. I have spent time with her. I personally have a real and genuine love for her, which is perhaps inappropriate. So I'm always going to be Team Miriam. But I just genuinely think she doesn't want it. Like, I know she does really love primetime. And she loves, exactly as she mentions, she loves those kind of things, getting to go and do those kind of interviews.
Yeah.
You know, traveling. She made a documentary last year or the year before and went to Selma in, you know, in Alabama and stuff. And she loves that kind of thing, really getting into the nitty gritty of a story. And you're not going to get to do that on the Late Late Show.
No, absolutely.
So, I think fair play to her.
Absolutely. So it seems I'm still rooting for my girl Angela Scanlon to take it. I would love her. There's something about her that ticks that little gay icon box that I'm just compelled towards her. I'd love to see her do it.
Yeah, I love Angela, but I just think we need... I mean, it depends on what they're going to do with the show. I think if they keep the show the same, it has to be someone who's got a bit more of a journalistic background, you know, because is Angela going to be able to like do a serious panel on the Good Friday Agreement?
I'm sure she could.
I mean, look, I think she'd give it a good go. Yeah. Like, you know, this is no disrespect to Angela, but it's just not her background.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see. We shall see. I don't have a favorite. There's no one in particular that I want or think will.
Well, one person who's shooting up in the odds, it ties into our next story, is Carl Mullen. He's 20-1 now, apparently, after his win Dancing with the Stars.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, again, I know Carl personally, and I love him, but I am shocked by that.
So I'm expecting the Carl Mullen taking his head out of the ring tweet anytime soon.
Oh, I mean, it would be a lovely program. No doubt about it. It would be lovely. Okay, well, let's talk about Dancing with the Stars since we brought it up now. Carl Mullen of 2FM, my former colleague, and I have to say, absolutely lovely person, really and truly lovely, gorgeous man, won Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, him and his partner, Emily Barker, took home the win. Some people were disappointed because he wasn't considered the best dancer.
Yeah.
It's almost like the show is a popularity contest, not a dance contest.
Yes, it's almost like that.
Almost as if. But I was delighted to see Carl win. I didn't get to follow the full show this week or this year. And I thought the lineup was great. I excited watching it, but I just could not contend with the RT player to follow up on it.
It's fair.
But I was delighted to see Carl win because I kind of feel he was in that position where it was kind of dealt with that he needed to be given bigger personalities alongside him on the radio to kind of get listeners in. I think it's great to see that he has shown that he's charismatic and likable enough that he can hold his own audience.
Well, I think the thing about Carl, sorry, we both obviously have frogs in our throat.
Yeah.
The thing about Carl is that Carl worked so hard. Like, Carl was working, I hope I'm not like telling stories out of school. I don't think he'd mind me saying this. Carl was working in 2FM the whole time that I was working in 2FM. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for most of those years, he was working behind the scenes and working really hard and taking every possible opportunity and making it known that he was there and he wanted to work. And then he started building a profile outside of the station for himself with his videos on his Instagram. And he really has created, you know, the career that he wanted. He wasn't maybe getting, I mean, he hasn't said this to me, but I mean, from an outside perspective, like, it didn't look like he was getting the opportunities he really wanted and he started creating them for himself. And I just have so much admiration for that. Mm-hmm. Like, and despite the fact that he, you know, it took a while for him to get to where he wanted to be, he never complained. He never had an attitude about it, which is more than I can say for myself. So, like, you know, he really is just a total gem. And it's great to see him, doing things on his own, you know, carving out a space for himself.
Exactly.
And he deserves it.
You know, and
that's no shade
on
Brooke Scullion, who I gather was an absolutely unbelievable dancer. I didn't watch it. So, like, it's, you know, but at the end of the day, it is a popularity contest. Like, we know this every single year. It's like this.
And fair play to him for beating, you know, literal influencer and, you know, popularity contest winner Suzanne Jackson. You
absolutely.
Know, I thought she would have taken home. But yeah, fair play to him.
Yeah.
So the future of Dancing with the Stars is, you know, question mark. We're not sure. It hasn't been renewed for a new season. It's everyone who's part of the show is very keen to do it again. The ratings seem to be good. The final drew in an audience of 471,000 with 386,000 streams. I'm not sure how comparable that is for some of their other big shows. But, like,
it's strong. Like, it's like, it's,
the guts of a million seems to be a lot. Like,
yeah, it's about a 40%. They said that the last show had about a 40% share, which is really strong.
Yeah.
But the problem is it's expensive.
Yeah, it's very expensive to make. I don't know where I heard this rumor. So it could have came to me in a dream and therefore not be true. I heard a rumor that they want to do The Masked Singer instead.
Oh. Would that be cheaper? Probably would be cheaper.
I mean, you don't have to pay for the dancers as much. You just pay for the cast. You don't have to do it live.
Yeah.
So there's an element of that you can, you know, you have a comfort, element of comfort in that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just love the parochial nature of Irish celebrity in The Masked Singer.
I think it would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that I wanted to talk about this is because it just shows what a kind of precarious position TV is in general. Because once upon a time, I think a show that had this kind of audience share would have been able to absolutely sustain a high budget. But, like, because, you know, 40% of an audience today is not 40% of an audience 30 years ago, because it's significantly less people because less people are watching TV. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just not as many eyeballs and therefore not as much, you know, money in advertising. So it's really hard to make a big budget program like that in Ireland, where we're talking about a relatively small number of people.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what TV has to do to kind of pivot and make things work. That's interesting, the Masked Singer.
Well, apparently it's a big hit with advertisers and families and stuff like that. So there definitely is an appetite, but I guess it's just a cost-benefit analysis they have to do. Which is always so callous to hear Irish being brought down to a cost-benefit analysis.
Honestly,
but that's life.
That's the biz.
That's life.
It sure is. So Succession.
Speaking of business.
Succession, season 4. airs this week, and it is season four, is it?
Yeah, season four.
Sorry, suddenly I was like, am I? Is it? season four starts airing this week, which is obviously very exciting for anybody absolutely. Who loves Succession, which is absolutely me. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've literally just been waiting for this since the last episode of season three aired. And they had a big premiere in New York, and Brian Cox was really acting the maggot.
He was, yeah. Brian Cox, who plays Logan Roy in the season, got into character and gave the paparazzi a taste of his formidable character while shouting at them in character. So yeah, the paparazzi were asking him and all the cast to move to the right for the photo, so he shouted at them for them to move to the left so that he could photograph them. And it's just fun to see, you know, him take on this character, because obviously Logan Roy is terrifying.
Yeah,
you would not want to cross him.
No.
And what's so brilliant about Logan, or who do we need to explain? Do we need a primer for the show if people haven't watched it?
No, Logan Roy is the head of a family like the Murdochs. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And he's very scary, but then he also can be like so soft and loving at times, which makes him even more scary.
Yeah.
So we got the full brunt of his formidable side as we saw him roar across the red carpet, but it was all in jest. He was just, you know, giving people a show. Yeah. So I'm excited for the season to come back. This is going to be the final season. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to know who's going to end up with Royco Enterprise. It's kind of the biggest prestige drama on TV, would you say? It's definitely taken over from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's number one. And, you know, lots of people will be really sad to see it go. But I think it probably is good that they've decided to end it with this season.
Yeah.
You know, because it's always disappointing when you love a program and then even though you want more, sometimes it can kind of trail off.
Who do you want to be at the helm?
Roman, probably.
Mm. Yeah.
Even though, yeah, probably Roman. I wouldn't mind a Roman Shiv. Oh my God, why is Jeremy Strong's character's name gone out of my head? Kendall. Yeah, I wouldn't mind if the three of them kind of, yeah, and they actually managed to just be like work together.
Mm.
But I don't know. Yeah, probably Roman if I had to pick one.
Yeah, you used to want Shiv, and then now I think I'm leaning towards Roman. I also find Kieran Culkin very attractive. I don't know what it is about him. I just find it so compelling.
Yeah. No, I mean, not for me.
Okay.
But, you know, to each his own. But I do love Roman. Like, yeah. I love him. But I also do have a softness for Kendall. Poor Kendall. Like, no, at times I've just been like, just give it to
what
him.
What a tragic figure.
Truly, one of the most tragic figures.
Tom or Uncle Greg? No, neither of them?
No, as much as I love Tom and Greg as characters, no.
And talk about tragic, Connor as well. What a hapless man.
Oh no, Connor, please go and live in the desert. Like, go, no, go, I'm finished.
Go
with
do
you.
Your theater production.
Before we finish up, let's do a little pop corner because some interesting news this week from Madonna and Taylor Swift's tour launched.
Yeah, so Taylor Swift, her Eras tour started on in Arizona last week. She is doing a seemingly unprecedented 44 songs over 3 hours and 15 minutes. So to compare, Beyoncé's Coachella set was about 34 songs.
It's huge.
Yeah, and Bruce Springsteen, who's known for doing a long performance, does 20-odd songs. So this is really a huge undertaking. There are 21 outfit changes from Versace to Oscar de la Renta. She is basically doing more or less all of her 10 albums. She's kind of snubbed two of them, Speak Now and Taylor Swift, the debut. Fans are speculating, as they are wont to do. On her shows, she wore a t-shirt that says "Who's Taylor Swift anyway, ooh?" And the "ooh" is in red letters. And then another one that says "A lot going on at the moment," and "a lot" is in red letters. And people think that over the course of the concerts, she will wear letters in red that will spell out "Speak Now, Taylor's version," announcing her next re-recording.
She's something else, isn't
Get
she?
Her to do the crosswords in the Irish Times. Like, honestly, her brain.
It's like, and the thing is, that probably is it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That probably is. She's like, she's truly the way she works. It's something else. If you're not familiar with Taylor Swift and her like Easter eggs and like hidden clues for fans, Google it, because this is the stuff that she does all the time. And I don't know where she gets the energy, frankly.
I don't know.
And then Madonna.
Yes, Madonna posted to Twitter this week to announce that she is in the studio with Max Martin. When in doubt, go to work. Nothing shuts down the noise and the naysayers more than being in the creative process. And there's a picture of Madonna and Max scribbling away on pieces of paper beside each other, not looking at each other. So I'm not sure how well they're getting on. but yeah, it's exciting news.
Yeah.
Is this new music? We don't know. We know. Well, I personally think Madonna works best when she works with one producer or one or
I
two producers,
too,
William Warbush or Shep Pettibone, those sort of people. So a Madonna Max Martin universe is somewhere I'd happy to leave.
And just for anyone who doesn't know, Max Martin, you know a million of his songs.
Yeah.
He's Baby One More Time, I Want It That Way, That's the Way It Is, Celine Dion, It's Gonna Be Me, NSYNC, Katy Perry, I Kissed a Girl, Roar, Taylor Swift, Shake It Off, The
Weeknd's
Blinding Lights, Save Your Tears, like absolutely enormous pop hits. So very exciting to think that there, we could be getting another era of Madonna actually having good songs in the charts.
Absolutely. And 80s synth pop is back, baby. So, you know,
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I'm ready, Madonna. Okay, well, thank you so much, Cian.
No problem.
Where can people find you?
Yeah, so you can find out sissy.pod on Instagram at sissy.pod or wherever you get catch up. And yeah, just find me over there. Plug in my wares.
Have a lovely week. Well, it is time for me to go now, but thank you so much once again for joining me this week. I so appreciate it. Don't forget, if you want to get extra episodes, join the Patreon. It's patreon.com/catchupwithlouisemacsharry. There was a mailbag episode, as I said at the start, that went up this week. And then the week after next, there'll be a new cultural reflection episode. I think I know what we're going to be watching and talking about, but I need to confirm access. Mysterious. But I'll know for sure next week so that you can get on board ahead of the new episode. Before I go, recommendations. I don't have a lot. I finished Next in Fashion, which I just massively enjoyed. I know I mentioned it last week. I'm just going to say it again in case it went out of your head. It's so enjoyable. I did a big clean of my bedroom this week and I had it on in the background and it was just the perfect company. And that's on Netflix. And then I also have finally started into Daisy Jones and the Six on Amazon Prime, which isn't in my opinion, it's not like mind-blowingly good, but it's pleasant watching. And the music in it is really good. I have been listening to some of the music in the car and stuff. So I think it's worth it. It's just kind of nice to be in that kind of rock and roll era, I guess. It's a series based on the book by Taylor Jenkins Reid, and it's set in... It's kind of about Fleetwood Mac. It's not about Fleetwood Mac, but it's about a very similar kind of band and time period and sound to Fleetwood Mac. And it's just nice to be in that kind of time frame and look at that fashion and that style. Some great hair. Very enjoyable. And that, as I said, is on Amazon Prime. Now that I'm going to go, I will talk to you at the end of the week. You know where I am in the meantime, Louise McSharry and all the social medias. Thank you very much to all of my wonderful contributors. Thank you so much to Acast for having me on the network. And I hope you have a lovely week. But as I always say, if it can't be good, which they can't all be, just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And I will talk to you next Friday.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.